this morning and for the next two Sunday mornings, God willing, I want us to consider together what it means to journey through the Badlands. And in doing so, we'll observe what it means to have the blessing of God in preparation for our pilgrimage through the Badlands. Over the next 3 weeks, we'll not be, it's not three separate talks. It's not even a series in three parts. It's one talk which lasts for 90 minutes. Now, I did ask permission to keep you here for the full 90 minutes this morning, but those wise men in leadership thought I should show some mercy. So I've been instructed to spread the sermon over 3 weeks, much, I'm sure, to your relief. Obviously, since it's one talk, it will be of greatest benefit to those who have the stamina and endurance to come along on each of the 3 mornings. If, however, you can't come, there, I hope, will be enough in each individual session to make it worth your while trying to get along. This morning, we will consider the need for preparation. Preparation for journeying through the Badlands. Secondly, on the next Sunday morning, God willing, the nature of the preparation needed. This morning, the need for preparation. Next Sunday, the nature of the preparation. And then lastly, on the third morning, the benefits that flow from the preparation. So let's begin by reading a couple of, I'll read to you a couple of passages of Scripture that will give us a context for our thinking together. Deuteronomy 1, first of all, 6 to 8. The Lord our God said to us in Horeb, this is Moses speaking, you've stayed long enough in this mountain. Then take your journey and go to the hill country of the Amorites and to all their neighbors in the Arba, in the hill country, and in the lowland, and in the Negev, and in the sea coast, the land of the Canaanites and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. See, I have set the land before you. Go in, take possession of the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abram, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give to them and to their offspring after them. And then Numbers chapter 6, verses 22 to 27. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and to his sons, saying, thus shall you bless the people of Israel. You shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. So they shall put my name upon the people of Israel, and I will bless them. The book of Exodus records the deliverance of Israel from slavery in Egypt, as you know. And you're equally familiar with the fact that the book of Joshua records the entry of Israel into its inheritance in the promised land of Canaan. But where are we to find the experiences through which Israel went between Egypt and Canaan? And to find that information, we need to examine such records as the book of Numbers. But I'm sure if I mention the book of Numbers, some will be thinking, but why should 21st century Christians be interested in such ancient stories? I mean, what possible relevance could there be for in such outdated narratives for today's church? The fact of the matter is that the experience of individual believers and of the church in general today parallels the experience of Israel as recorded in the book of Numbers all those millennia ago. Israel journeyed across the wilderness till the nation reached its inheritance in Canaan. And it surely was a long, eventful journey. And we believers, and the church in general, we are also on a journey across a wilderness, across the wilderness of this world to our inheritance, not an earthly inheritance in an earthly country like Israel, but to an eternal inheritance in heaven itself. And as we believers today watch the nation of Israel learn from its experiences in its physical journey across the wilderness to its physical inheritance, so we can learn the lessons for ourselves as we make our spiritual journey to our eternal inheritance. So I'm suggesting to you that it is exceedingly important that we understand and take note of these ancient narratives. If Israel, and if you and I are to undertake such a journey, preparation, I would suggest, will be necessary. And I want to point out to you why preparation will be necessary. You see, when it came to Israel crossing a desert, crossing a waste, howling wilderness, more than a dash of realism was needed. It would certainly not be a journey to be undertaken in bedroom slippers. It would not be a Sunday school picnic or a Sunday evening stroll. Israel would find the journey across the desert long, difficult, dangerous, exhausting, and discouraging. And more than once, Israel was tempted to give up, to turn back, to doubt the love of Jehovah for them. Listen to what they said, as typical of how they felt on many occasions. The people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Or would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives, our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt." So discouraged were the nation of Israel that they preferred, they said, death to the experience in the wilderness. And for us believers, our journey to our heavenly inheritance will also be difficult and dangerous and betimes discouraging. True, it will not all be difficult. There will be oases from time to time with dates and palm trees, things that make life worth living. And in the mercy of God, we'll be allowed to stay in such places for a little while. Indeed, we may wish that we could stay there forever to enjoy the good things that are found there. But we're realist enough to know that life isn't like that. And sooner or later, difficulties will come. In the Christian life, as in the journey across the desert that Israel undertook, we ought to enjoy all we can of the lovely things that come across our path, but we must be realist enough to know that dangers and difficulties will come. When my companions and I were young believers, so difficult did some find the journey that although they set out well, many indeed better than I, they have long since made shipwreck and are not now on the journey at all. As believers, we need to make no mistake. Our journey to our heavenly inheritance across the wilderness of this world will at times undoubtedly be dangerous and difficult and discouraging. The journey, therefore, that we undertake should not be embarked upon lightly, thoughtlessly, carelessly, or without adequate preparation. And God confirms the need for preparation in the book of Numbers. For although I said that Numbers recorded the details of the journey of Israel between Egypt and Canaan, that's not quite true. Chapters 11 to 35 record the journey. But the first 10 chapters don't record the journey. They record the preparation that was made for the journey. Perhaps you remember when you were young and the prospect of a day at the seaside. You know, the sun's shining, the waves are beckoning, and you just want to get up and go and get started. But your mother insists, you will insist on delay till she's packed the sun cream and the sticking plasters and the picnic baskets and the towel and all you want to do, you want to say, "Mum, would you please get started? We're wasting our time. Let's just get going." Never mind the preparation. But it's not long. The day isn't very old before a skinned knee or sunburn or a rumbling stomach reminds us of the importance of the preparation that Mother made. And so here in the book of Numbers, so dangerous did God know the journey to Canaan would be for Israel that he spends 10 chapters, over 25% of the book, preparing Israel for the journey, preparing Israel to face the dangers that they would meet along the way. And the experience which Israel encountered, as recorded in chapters 11 to 26, show the wisdom and the necessity for the preparation that God made in chapters 1 to 10. The preparation made by God for Israel was, if you have any familiarity with the book of Numbers, of two types. There was physical preparation and there was also spiritual preparation. God gave instructions for such things as ropes and wagons and oxen. All those things God knew would be necessary on the long journey over difficult terrain. Listen, number 7. The leaders brought their offerings before the Lord, 6 wagons, 12 oxen, a wagon to every 2 of the chiefs, for each one an ox. They brought them before the tabernacle. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Accept them from them, that they may be used in the service of the tent of meeting, and give them to the Levites, so that each man, according to his service." Moses took the wagons and oxen and gave them to the Levites. In the journey across the desert, wagons would be jolly useful. And so would oxen. And God understood it. But he also gave spiritual instruction about such things as the worship of God, the service of the tabernacle, the praise of Jehovah. And at first sight, such things may not seem to be particularly practical, of much value when facing a long, difficult journey across a trackless desert. But of course, God understood that in making preparations for Israel's journey, practicalities would be important. Oxen and ropes and wagons would have their place. But he also understood that the nation's greatest need, by far in the undertaking, would not be practical, would not be material, but would be spiritual, and therefore God spends the majority of the time making spiritual preparation for Israel, not just material. And for us who are believers, it is exactly the same. The journey through the wilderness of this world to our inheritance in heaven, it is not enough to take enough grease for the wheels of the wagon. It's not enough just to ensure that there's enough fodder for the oxen. In our journey, there is an infinitely greater danger that we face than the lack of material provision for our journey. The danger is that in that terrible place, which is life in the wilderness of this world, life in a hostile world, which is enemy territory, that we believers will lose our faith. So that in the whole enterprise, we can end up being lost, going round in circles, dropping out of the whole enterprise altogether. As I've said, there have been believers, more than a few, who set out well in their youth, who ran well in their early years, but who have lost their grip on faith. In middle life, or before it, have come to doubt the truth of the Word of God, have even come to doubt that there is a God at all. And so life has for them ceased to be a pilgrimage, ceased to be a journey to a goal, and has instead become just an aimless going round in circles, endless, meaningless circles. But what are the Badlands? What do I mean by the Badlands? Where are the Badlands to be found? Israel had been wandering in the desert for 40 years. God had brought them to the borders of Canaan. They had refused to go in, and God redirected them to wander in the desert for 40 years as a result of their disobedience. But now a new generation has come. The time has come for the nation to go up to the border of Canaan once again, this time to enter the land, enter their inheritance. And as Israel turned their back on the desert, as they set their face to Canaan, the road that they had to take led through the Badlands. We read it. God said, turn, take your journey, go to the hill country of the Amorites, and to all their neighbours in the Arba, the hill country, the lowland, the Negev, the sea coast, the land of the Canaanites and the Lebanon, as far as the river Euphrates. Your way, says God, will run through the Badlands. And the wisdom of God in making preparation for the journey for Israel is absolutely clear and evident by the record of the events which overtook the nation as it made its journey. Chapters 20 to 25 in the book of Numbers give ample evidence of the importance of the preparation that God made. On their journey, they experienced times of opposition and danger, difficulty, sin, and failure. And in those experiences, they had nothing to rely on, except the preparation that God had previously made for them. The nation may not have realized its need for preparation beforehand, just like us on our journey to the seaside. But it certainly was the case that their experience in the Badlands convinced them that God knew what he was doing. Numbers 20. In the Badlands, Miriam died and was buried. Chapter 20, Edom, that nation said, you shall not pass through, lest I come with the sword against you. Chapter 20 again, Aaron died in the Badlands. Chapter 21, the Canaanite, the king of Arad, fought against Israel and took some of them captive. 21 again, Sion gathered his people together and went out against Israel and fought against Israel. 21 again, Og, king of Bashan, went out against the people to battle at Edrei. Chapter 22, Balak, king of Moab, sent messengers to Balak and said, come, curse me this people. Chapter 25, the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. 25 again, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianitish woman to his family in the sight of Moab. The experiences of the nation of Israel in the Badlands left them exposed had they not had the blessing and the preparation of God. And for the children of Israel found the Badlands to be a place of war and conflict. As we've already seen, they met Edom, Arad, Amorites, the king of Bashan, the king of Moab, the king of Midian. One after another, the enemy stood in their way, and they found the Badlands to be a place of war and conflict. They found it to be a place of death. Miriam died there. Aaron died there. Miriam couldn't half play the tambourine, you remember. Man, she could sing. Exodus 15, Miriam took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went after her with timbrels and dances, and Miriam answered them saying, sing to the Lord. She could sing, but now there was no singing. For this was the Badlands, the place of death, the place of hunger and thirst. Numbers 20, there was no water for the congregation. Numbers 20 again, it was a place of no grain, no figs, no vines, no pomegranates, no water to drink. It was a place of conflict, a place of death, a place of hunger and thirst, a place of sin and rebellion. Moses sinned. He cursed. He struck the rock instead of speaking to it. Aaron and Miriam sinned. They spoke against Moses, and Miriam was struck with leprosy. The nation sinned by committing immorality with the nations around them. They sinned again when they spoke against Moses, and many of them died as a result of the bite of serpents. So the Badlands were a place of death and sin and hunger and thirst and war and conflict. And we today, as we walk our journey through the Badlands, will find the same. It will not all be difficult, but sooner or later, the difficulty will come. Paul says that when we enter the Badlands, when we encounter our enemies, it will be an evil day. You remember he said in Ephesians 6:13, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. Some point in our journey, we will encounter the mighty kings, the lords of the high places who will stand opposed to bar our way, determined to turn us back, to keep us out of our inheritance. And those opposing powers are very real. To ignore them, to underestimate them, would be a grave mistake. A mistake which you and I would make at our peril. You remember, Paul says this to the church in Ephesians 6:12. He reminds us that our struggle is not against flesh and blood. That would be easy. But our struggle, the enemies we will meet in the Badlands, are the principalities and powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Those are the enemies, says Paul, that we will encounter. And when we encounter them, it will for us be an evil day. We will encounter, without doubt, persecution, suffering and death. For many of our brothers and sisters in this world, we've been thinking about it already this morning in Iran, to walk through the Badlands will mean persecution. And for us in the West, for whom persecution seems to be a long way off, we can see even here the shadows of difficulty and persecution. For the God of political correctness is intent on passing legislation that will make it exceedingly difficult for us as believers to speak as Christians, even in our day and generation. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility that even in the West, those who continue to express Christian values may yet know something of suffering and persecution. For the believer, the Badlands are a place of persecution now or in the future. The Badlands for us are a place of sickness and death. No matter who we are, no matter where we live, being human guarantees that at some point in life we will know the experience of sickness. We will know the approach of the icy hand of death. The Badlands for us is a place of sin. Yes, there is the suffering that the world inflicts on us. There is the suffering that being human inflicts on us, but there is the suffering that we bring upon ourselves as a result of our own personal willfulness and sin. You may object, oh, not me. Me fall into sin? Let the Badlands do their worst. I'll remain true. You mightn't realize it, but you're beginning to sound a lot like Peter. And you know what happened to him. Paul understood this danger, the danger that lies ahead of us in the Badlands, and he warns us that if we think we will stand, we need to be very careful in case we fall. We've all found it true, haven't we? As I say, I have lost many of my Christian companions as we journeyed through the Badlands. They started well, but now they're gone. Vivid testimony to the very real possibility that sin can overtake us in the Badlands. It doesn't matter who we are, how seemingly strong our faith is, how apparently immune we are to temptation, how immovable is our loyalty to Christ. We are none of us safe from the temptation to sin or the long reach of Satan. You may, like Miriam, have begun your journey towards your heavenly inheritance, singing. Begun the journey with a song in your heart, but perhaps your song has died on your lips. Perhaps your heart is heavy now. The Badlands have begun to take their toll. You will surely at some point in your journey know the dread hand of suffering and sin and death. Perhaps you've not felt it yet, but take it from one who has been on the journey for a while. You will. And when it comes, when the song begins to die, you'll long to understand why is this happening? You'll cry out to understand the meaning, and the heavens may be as brass. You may never know why this side of glory. You may be as spiritual as you like, but as the suffering intensifies, as the Badlands begin to take their toll, you will find your spirituality evaporating in proportion as the suffering increases. And it is then, at that moment, if not before, you will grasp and appreciate the absolute vital necessity of the preparation God has made for you in the Badlands. So let me just sum up what we've got to so far. God knew that the nation of Israel would journey, as it journeyed towards its earthly inheritance, the nation sooner or later would enter the Badlands. The Badlands were the territory of the kings of the high places, sworn enemies of Israel, whose determined purpose was to defeat and destroy the nation so as to prevent it from entering its inheritance. And that being the case, God knew that preparation for the coming conflict would be absolutely vital for Israel if it was to survive and enter its inheritance. Israel was not aware of its need for that preparation at the beginning, but God knew it full well. And it will be essential for us in ensuing weeks to see the nature of the preparation God made for Israel. God knows that you and I, as believers, are journeying towards our inheritance, our heavenly inheritance, and that sooner or later we too will enter the Badlands as part of that journey. For the Badlands for us are the territory also of the kings of the high places, of Satan, of world rulers of darkness, of sworn enemies of the children of God, whose determined purpose likewise is to defeat and destroy us and prevent us entering into our inheritance. And that being the case, God knows that that preparation for this conflict will be absolutely vital if we are to survive and enter our inheritance. Sometimes, sadly, we as believers are unaware of the need for preparation. We sail thoughtlessly towards the enemy, all unprepared as far as we are concerned. But God knows our need full well, and it will be essential that we understand and appreciate and cooperate with God in the provision and preparation that he makes for us as we face these enemies. To go unprepared would be fatal. To refuse to cooperate with God in his preparations would be foolish. And so next week and the week after, we need to understand, we need this week to understand the dangers. And then in the ensuing weeks, we need to understand and appreciate and embrace the preparation that God has made. If my talking to you this morning has left you concerned about the way ahead, let me make it clear that there is no need to be concerned. There is no need to be afraid. If we were facing it alone, then fear would be appropriate. But God has made preparations more than adequate for our journey. But we need to understand what they are. We need to embrace them for ourselves. And so I encourage you to think on it, to understand the journey you're on, and to come with an open mind and open arms and open heart to understand the grace and the mercy of God in making preparation for us. I encourage you to come and listen to what that preparation will be in the weeks ahead. Thank you.